Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Monday, March 26, 2012. Hope you had a great weekend. My thanks to Jimmy Bogle of the Tucson Weekly for hosting the show for me Friday while we took a long weekend to visit one of our friends at lovely Bear Mountain Lodge outside of Silver City, New Mexico. What a fantastic spot. I strongly urge you to check it out at bearmountainlodge.com. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI The Voice and The Voice Network stations KJAA AM 1240 in Globe and KAPR AM 930 in Douglas. We live stream the show at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And there are three places to hear the program anytime, anywhere: buckmastershow.com, tucsonsentinel.com, and thetucsoncitizen.com. We are live Monday through Friday, noon to 1. We get things rolling on Monday with our political face-off featuring one of our two teams of commentators. This week, it's the team of Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. 30 minutes past the hour, we will talk with the co-founders of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. We encourage you to be part of the conversation. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040. You can email questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page, where we are now just one friend away from 2,000 friends of the Buckmaster Show. If you have a story idea, I'd love to hear from you as well. Every Monday we get things going with one of our two teams of commentators. Bruce Ash is the Republican National Committeeman for Arizona, and Paul Eckerstrom is former chair of the Democratic Party in Pima County. He's now the current vice chair of the party locally. The Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's is located at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom, how are you gentlemen today?
Good.
Greetings. Greetings.
Did you both have a nice and good weekend?
You know something that was great? Went to a political meeting all day on Saturday and had had a lot of fun and then relaxed yesterday.
I wish I was at Bear Mountain.
Yeah, at Bear Mountain Lodge.
Yeah, I wish I'll try that. That
Please
sounds
do.
Like a great place.
Please do. Great people up there, and we hope to have them on board potentially as a sponsor of the show. Tonight from 7 to 9 here on KVOI and the Voice Network and KVOI.com, we carry the exclusive live CD8 debate sponsored by the Pima County Young Republicans, featuring the four Republican candidates in the April 17th primary. The winner, Paul Eckerstrom, will face Ron Barber in June, and the Democrats are pretty much coalesced behind Mr. Barber, aren't they?
Yeah, in a special election, that's the case. Obviously, in the fall, Ron has just made a decision that he's also going to go for the fall election in the new CD2, which is predominantly the same district, just a little bit different in changes, as well. And but for the special election, you know, everybody's behind Ron. You know, he's got Gabby Gifford's support, and obviously he's very well known as not only a victim of the shooting, but creating the foundation for civility and civil discourse in our public life, which I think has been a very good thing for our community. And because of that, I think Ron's going to be very formidable, not only in the special election, but in the fall as well.
Bruce Ash, you are the National Committeeman for Arizona, and I know that you do not endorse candidates in the primary election. But you've been watching the debates, and I think tonight's debate, Bruce, is probably the last one. Now we have early voting underway. What have you come away from these debates thinking?
Well, before I mention the debates of the candidates, I just want to mention Jeff Rogers being a student of that school of civility. I hope Ron Barber has been giving him better lessons than he has in the past. I'm sure that Ron will be very civil, though, in this election process.
It's a good thing Bruce doesn't have to debate Jeff every week, you know, because it would get pretty ugly,
boy.
I think.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
All right, well, enough fun.
We'll hold Jeff in reserve.
Enough fun.
Hold him in reserve case you can't make it someday. That would be good, Jeff,
you know,
and Bruce.
I think what we are finding is that we see four candidates that largely do reflect the views and values of conservatives, Republicans, independents within the district for the most part. This is going to be a very low turnout election, and it's going to be one, though, where those who do vote will vote with some great intensity. Ballots are out already, the early ballots, and it's still you're still able to get early ballots if you wish by contacting the Elections Department of Pima County. I think we're seeing a bit more quiet, a bit more reserved Jesse Kelly. I think we're seeing a little more substance from him than we have in the past. I think with Frank Antonori, and this is differentiated from his run back in 06, you now have a seasoned lawmaker, somebody who went to Congress went to the state legislature making promises and having kept all of them as it pertains to reducing the budget deficit, decreasing the size of state government, trying to do something positive about illegal immigration, as well as Second Amendment rights. And Frank has become a very skillful legislator. We see Martha McSally, who is really starting from scratch. She's on kind of a rocket-like trajectory. She's made some mistakes along the way, and I guess anybody would. And, you know, there are some funny stories that are out there. But certainly Martha has begun to prove herself as an able candidate, and we'll see what happens in this race. And probably the only one that I'm a little surprised about at times is Dave Sitton, because Dave Sitton has every bit the conservative level of values as the other three. I just don't know that he has really communicated and projected himself in the fashion that he has certainly projected with me, talking together as friends and as colleagues over the past 20 years or so.
Yeah. I view this primaries. It's going to be interesting to me what happens in this primary, in the special election, and whether it translates over into the primary in the fall. Whoever wins this, and my sense is Jesse Kelly's got a huge leg up on everybody else because of his name ID. He's got more money out there. He's obviously running more commercials. Although Dave Sitton seems to have some, and I've seen that, and Dave seems to have the backing of some of the more traditional local Republicans in terms of money, and got the endorsement of the Tea Party and the endorsement of Lute Olson the other day, which I thought was interesting. However, I think Jesse Kelly has a leg up. Now, the question is, does that translate into the fall primary season? And does whoever wins this primary get a big boost because of that? The other thing
is, do they even stay in for the fall?
Yeah,
I mean, all four have said they're going to stay in.
They're
going to
stay in. Money may dry up if they lose that the first primary and first round. And the second thing is in the primary, in the general election on the Democratic side, it's going to be very interesting. Steve Farley stepped back when Ron Barber decided to run. Nan Walden decided not to get into the race. But Matt Hines and Paulo Aboud still are in. And it's going to be interesting because Ron Barber has a huge leg up in terms of Gabby Gifford's backing and his status in terms of the community. The question is can Paula coalesce a lot of folks in the women's community around her to be able to raise enough money to compete? And same with Matt Hines, can he raise enough money to compete? Because really it's going to in congressional races, especially a district like this that's very close, it's all about being able to raise enough money to get your message out.
What we're really seeing is suddenly revealed weakness within the County Democrat Party and amongst the bench that the Democrat Party has here in Southern Arizona. Since 2007, when Gabby first took her oath of office, everybody has really they've rode her coattails, and a lot of the strength of the party has centered around her. Ron Barber has been a fine bureaucrat and a fine staff person who has served with distinction for, you know, gosh, I'm thinking almost 40 years. But I guess the question can be asked, and it's rightfully to be asked, how does that qualify him to run for Congress? And also, what qualifications does Ron Barber have relative in speaking to, let's say, somebody like Frank Antonori, who has cast the votes and he has run and he has won elections before, and Jesse Kelly, who's been in elections and so on. And Ron's health, truthfully, looks rather frail right now.
No,
this is an exhausting
election. I have to
election.
Jump in here. Ron's health is perfectly fine. And frankly, Ron has
why
been,
haven't we seen him
Ron's
very much
been involved,
in person?
Ron's been involved in government for a very long time, helping disabled people over the years in the Arizona state government. And then he went on and worked behind the scenes with Gabby Giffords on all the issues. He knows them all. He knows this district. He's grown
Big
up
difference
here.
Between he, that
he,
and,
he
and
went to
casting
school.
Votes.
He went to school here at the University of Arizona. Ron Barber is part of a community. And one of the most important things I think he did was create the foundation for civil discourse, because that is a need I think people, all of us know out there, that in our, especially in our political arena, there isn't enough civility anymore in it to be able to then to cross party lines and create a consensus to get things done for our community in the political
and
arena.
And his doctor has signed off on him running,
oh, yeah,
saying he's perfectly capable.
Well, we'll soon see. The proof's in the pudding, and of course all of us wish Ron Barber good health. But there is a huge difference between being the behind-the-scenes man and being out in front casting votes, being aware of the parliamentary procedure that is going on all around you, and all of the forces that come in to voting on legislation and sponsoring legislation, because we've essentially had little representation here in CD8 and certainly throughout Southern Arizona now for about 16 months.
Well, and much of those 16 months, okay. Ron was giving representation as the district office
never cast
person
a vote.
For Gabby.
We are going to take a break right here. This is the Monday Political Face-Off. Bruce Ash to the right of me and Paul Ackerstrom left of me in studio. We continue right after this.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencium and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Ever notice how much time you spend just getting where you want to go? Travel hassles, long drives, expensive parking can all ruin your trip and create a miserable experience. Tucson International Airport has the answer. With close, easy parking, quick check-in, a short walk to your gate, and airport amenities that make traveling stress-free and enjoyable. With nonstop destinations and connections around the world for business or for pleasure, fly TucsonAirport.com. It's the way to go.
Well, 20 on the Buckmaster Show, the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge at moesgallery.com. It's a family-owned and run organization. We like Moe's a lot. They've been running the organization since 1985, specializing in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, hanging services, and hanging systems. They have a great reputation, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Bruce Ash is with me, and Paul Eckerstrom. We've been talking about the debate that's coming up tonight, 7 to 9 here on KVOI. Let's go to Christopher quickly on the Buckmaster Show live line. He has a question for Bruce Ash.
Yes, my question for Mr. Ash is, when we as conservatives talk about Ron Barber not being qualified, does it not seem like a weak argument, especially in an area where we need to capture a lot of moderate votes? When you compare that to Jesse Kelly, he's never served in political office, let alone have a college degree, work outside of his father's company, doesn't live in the state, to my knowledge. I mean, are we not doing ourselves a disservice in that argument? And my second question is, with regarding Dave Sinton, how can you say that he's not espousing the language of conservatism that you so desire, but yet also in getting the endorsement of the Tea Party? Thank you.
Thanks, Christopher.
Well, Dave Sinton certainly did get the endorsement of a Tea Party leader. He didn't get the endorsement of a Tea Party. And there are lots of Tea Parties around. If you were a conservative, you'd probably know that. It's not a monolithic an organization. There are several all around, even here in Pima County. With respect to your first question about Jesse Kelly, life experiences are such that college educations aren't necessarily a key factor. I've known Jesse Kelly now for almost 3 years, and frankly, sometimes I question his age and if he takes some kind of pills to keep him look young, because he has the wisdom of somebody who I swear is more like 50 years old. He's very bright. He's very perceptive. One of the things that I think would give him credibility over Mr. Barber is he's able to think very, very quickly on his feet. And I don't see that coming from a bureaucrat, somebody who typically goes back, consults, coalesces, and then makes a decision, usually based out of an instruction book.
Instruction book.
Paul, let me jump quickly, then I want to talk about the healthcare thing that's going on.
You know, if Jesse Kelly has experience, it's that the only thing I know about him is that he wants to end Social Security, he wants to end Medicare. If he wants to run on that, great. I mean, we'll win that race easy.
Jesse
again.
Kelly hasn't said one thing about ending either.
He did too. In the last election, he did.
We're talking about this election.
Well, it's different. Okay, so his beliefs have changed, just like Mitt Romney does every other day. Is that what you're saying?
Mitt Romney and the national campaign that's coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court today opened its debate on whether the nation's new health care law is constitutional. My question for you, Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom, regardless of the will the outcome affect the general election, the fall campaign for Mr. Obama and most likely Mr. Romney?
Is that for me?
Yeah.
Oh.
For you, Mr. Ash.
I actually don't think it will. I don't think that there'll be a ruling at this time from the Supreme Court. And if we do get one, it may be so narrow that it doesn't make a difference. I believe that when we elect a Republican president, that person will make it as his first goal to repeal the parts of Obamacare that are most injurious to our national economy and our national real politic. We saw just in the last couple of weeks, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has stated that the cost of Obamacare, which was expected to be around roughly $900 billion over the next 10 years, will run approximately $1.76 billion. And that When you couple the fact that right now 65% of every dollar that comes into the Treasury goes to pay Social Security, Medicare, SCHIP, the Veterans Administration, and Medicaid.
Okay.
Where do we have enough money to take care of all these others without tremendously adding to the tax base of this country?
Paul Eckerstrom.
One, to answer the question, I don't think it will make much difference. If the Supreme Court strikes down the law,
mm-hmm.
I think it's an issue that's off the table, so it might help a little bit in terms of just focusing on the economy. But other than that, I don't think it makes much difference because, frankly, I think the Republican nominee is Mitt Romney. This is a person that implemented the exact same program in Massachusetts as governor.
Nowhere close.
And the individual mandate, everything with it, the same thing. And in 2009, when the debate was raging about this, he did an op-ed piece basically lauding that the Obama administration should be looking towards the individual mandate and copying the Massachusetts system, and he was bragging about it. And guess what? Obama put it in. One of the things people don't understand, this individual mandate, the system that was put in place in Massachusetts, has always been a Republican idea, starting with Richard Nixon, who tried to implement something similar. Bob Dole, in countering the Clinton health care program that failed, proposed an alternative that included this. And Obama adopted this because that's what he thought he could get consensus on and pass with Republicans. And the Republicans went away from their own policies and now are attacking it just because Obama proposed it. Frankly, if this is struck down by the Supreme Court, I hope then that – I mean we spend 17% of gross national product on healthcare when the closest other country spends only 10%. We can't sustain this any longer. We need something that helps us. And frankly, the thing that really works, I think, is national health insurance. Like what Canada has, and it's basically Medicare for all. That would be the best way of bringing down costs for healthcare, the best way of covering everybody.
So you say basically it was a Republican idea.
Yeah, it was a Republican idea. And I would hope this gets struck down so we could get a real solution to the problem.
Okay. Well, first of all, the real issue here is what Obamacare would do to our country in the future. And I think it's pretty clear that it's an unsustainable operation. We cannot force individuals to buy medical insurance, and if we can't, and that's likely to be struck down by the Supreme Court, but if we can't do that, then Obamacare falls on its own for economic reasons. The differences between The Massachusetts plan and the national plan are many, but the solutions to the healthcare crisis have more to do not with a government program, but with free enterprise, competition with insurance companies over state borders, just like we buy our car insurance. It's about some limited forms of tort reform. It's about the ability to set up those who are most vulnerable in risk pools and share those risks amongst a broad spectrum of Americans. And it's about making sure that we create portability so when somebody leaves their job in Tucson and goes to Texas, they have the ability to bring their health care with them
without spending
almost $2 trillion.
Go ahead, Paul. I would
just finally say that, the Nixon-Dole Romney-Care program that we've got in place right now isn't a real solution. It's a better than nothing. And if this gets struck down, I hope we consider national health insurance.
Paul and Bruce, thank you very much. The Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom frame mirrors. They have art there, wonderful art, picture framing and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's is at Fort Lowell and Dodge, moesgallery.com. That's going to do it for the Monday Political Face-Off. Coming up next, the Planetary Science Institute, celebrating its 40th anniversary. We talk more about that as we continue with Buckmaster.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. As the Supreme Court takes up the challenge to the president's health care law, Republican presidential hopeful Rick Santorum is pressing ahead with his claim that he is the Republican best able to defeat President Obama on that issue. Mitt Romney is trumpeting some new support from conservative Republicans as he hopes to wrap up the GOP presidential nomination. Among those now backing Romney, Utah Senator Mike Lee, an early Tea Party supporter. A third member of the international force in Afghanistan has been killed today, apparently by members of the Afghan security forces. Updating Wall Street, heading into the final half hour of today's trading, the Dow's up about 151 points at 13,232, the NASDAQ ahead 52 points. More details at srnnews.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union, improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
So, 12:34 now on the Buckmaster Show. Support for the Buckmaster Show comes in part from our friends at Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley. Splendido is a true continuing care retirement community. You can find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. The Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute is celebrating its 40th year as a nonprofit organization engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Joining me in studio are the two founders of PSI, Dr. William Hartman and Dr. Don Davis. Dr. Davis is now a senior scientist and trustee emeritus of the PSI Board of Trustees, on which he has served for 15 years. In addition to his leadership of the Institute as co-founder and director for over 30 years, he's made many contributions to planetary science, including advancing our knowledge of asteroids and the origin of the moon. Dr. Hartman is a senior scientist of PSI. He and Dr. Davis are known for developing at PSI the current theory of the origin of the moon by a large planetesimal impact into the forming Earth. Dr. Hartman's current work involves development of the PSI isochron system of counting impact craters to infer ages of various planetary surface units. Dr. Hartman has won many awards, including the first recipient of the Carl Sagan Award from the American Astronomical Society. In addition to his planetary work, he's known for his astronomical paintings and popular writing, including textbooks, popular science, and two published novels. Don, he has a longer resume than you, it seems.
No, that's the downside of being a management. You spend all your time solving these problems while others get to go off and have great fun.
And pad their resumes. Right?
You are a fantastic painter. I've always called Bill Hartman, Don, kind of a Renaissance man. But the astronomical science paintings really are special, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. They contribute so much to our science. You know, Bill's paintings have made the cover of numerous books, meeting reports and things of this type, too. In fact, Bill told me at one time, you know, that he gets a wonderful interaction between his science and his art, that when he does the art, it raises real questions. And as a scientist, he goes off and gets the answer to those. But I'm really jealous. I'll just say one more thing, too, because in Bill's community of artists, there's another artist whose name is Don Davis. And people frequently come up to me and said, oh, I just love your paintings and things like that. And it is such a temptation to say, oh, yes, I just do those in my spare time. But in reality, I do point out that there's another person with my namesake who's out there in this community, and only Bill Hartman has sufficient talent to be an outstanding scientist and an outstanding artist.
And the rest of us are still trying to figure out which is the real Don Davis. it's fun to go to a conference and hear a new discovery, and then what I like to do is go home and try to imagine what would it be like to really be there as a human being. And often, as Don says, that raises questions about things the scientists themselves haven't necessarily measured yet.
Bill, did you start out wanting to be an artist or a scientist, or how did the two get together?
Oh, I guess I always thought the art was kind of the secondary thing. My grandfather was a painter, and we were able to put together a nice website about his work recently, Andrew Hartman. You can, I think, find that on the web. So I grew up with paintings on the walls and so forth. It seemed like something that was okay to do. But I really put it all aside to go to college and study physics and then come here to University of Arizona and get my degree in astronomy here.
And you and Don met at the University of Arizona?
Yeah, we sort of knew of each other, but you were in physics.
We were actually in the same building, in the old physics building, because the lunar lab, such as it was in those days, had temporary space up on the fourth floor. I was on the second floor, and there wasn't a lot of vertical mixing between the two, but we knew that there was these crazy guys up there. We called it the Looney Bin, and they were trying to figure out things about the moon. So we were aware of each other, but we didn't know each other particularly well at that time.
That was throughout the 60s, and that was Gerard Kuiper's laboratory. There's now a building named for him on campus, and a lot of amateur astronomers will know the name of the Kuiper Belt, which is a group of asteroids way out in the outer part of the solar system. So we were all in that lab, and it was a very exciting time since President Kennedy had early on announced that we were going to the moon at the beginning of the decade. He gave that big speech.
And how did it come about that the two of you in 1972 decided that Tucson would be fertile ground away from the university to start the Planetary Science Institute, and have it as an independent, not affiliated with the U of A?
I was just going to say that after we finished up our graduate work, we took separate paths. Bill stayed in Tucson pursuing science. I went off to Houston to work on the Apollo program and headed up the team that developed the return to Earth software that calculated all the maneuvers to bring the Apollo astronauts back to Earth. Fortunately, everything worked well in Apollo 13, as we found out. But at the end of that, in late 1970, I wanted to go back to science. And I heard of this organization which was forming in Tucson. And Bill, at that time, I think, was also joining that organization, which led to the Planetary Science Institute.
It had started out as several of Kuiper's graduate students went to Chicago and worked in we called it ITRI, I-I-T-R-I, and it originally was Illinois Institute of Technology Research Institute. So there they were in Chicago. They convinced people to open an office in Tucson, and that was kind of a forerunner. Several of us worked for ITRI and then basically left ITRI and in 72 reformed as a new group, which became the Planetary Science Institute. And we always joke it actually started in my living room with my wife Gail for a period of time until we could get organized and into an office.
And it has grown into something very, very special.
It's amazing to us old timers who look around when we were a small group of just five scientists initially to where we are today with 100 staffers, including 82 scientists. We have employees in 18 states, Washington, D.C., and in 7 foreign countries. And this, I think, points out to the success of what I would call our fundamental business model, if you will. That is, we can provide an administrative home for high-quality scientists who are able to get a grant, but they don't want to move to Tucson for whatever reason.
So they can work basically anywhere.
They can work basically anywhere, but they have to have an administrative home because NASA does not give grants to individuals, only to institutions.
And we're talking some good money for an economic driver for Tucson.
That's right. I mean, we're a nonprofit. There's a number of nonprofits in town, and we're one that brings in $8 million a year. That's our current budget. So that's mostly money that's coming into the Arizona economy and the Tucson economy, in fact. And I think that that's an interesting take on the Tucson business community because, you know, normally you look in the business section and it's more about merchants and so forth. But this is money coming from outside the community that wouldn't be here at all if Tucson weren't such a great science city.
In fact, I would just say this Arizona Star gave a ranking of the institutions, excluding the University of Arizona and Raytheon, for how much money they bring in from NASA. And PSI ranked number one in Southern Arizona. Of all the smaller ones, we're the biggest in the pond.
And what are the challenges of being a nonprofit like PSI?
Well, there's a challenge is that we're all on soft money, so that's something to keep in mind, but so is every other small business person. On the other hand, there are many opportunities because we have a little more flexibility in some ways to go after sources of funding and kinds of activities. We have a full-time education office now, and that's interacting with the Tucson schools. We have teachers that can go out into classrooms. We have programs that have been developed by the scientists, kind of teaching modules. We've been – that group has also been working at teacher education workshops. So that's something we feel really good about. And I might say also this business of off-site employees, it has solved a really interesting problem for scholars where you have a couple and one spouse gets a job at a university campus, let's say. Well, there's only one job in that field at the university, but the other spouse can work through us and get a job doing the kind of research they love. And we've had a number of cases. We're really quite proud of our mix of men and women. And we've had a number of young women scientists come in where PSI has been able to get help them get their first grant, you know, and really get started in their career.
We're speaking with Donald Davis, Dr. Davis, and Dr. William Hartman, the founders of the Pacific or the Planetary Science Institute based right here in Tucson. We will continue with our discussion with Dr. Davis and Dr. Hartman as we continue with the Buckmaster Show.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Everyone is switching to high-efficiency appliances because they have money, and a Culligan high-efficiency water softener does the same. But did you know that you can rent rather than buy? Think about it. No equipment to pay for upfront, money-saving purchase options if you change your mind, and service calls are included in the rental rate. In fact, you'll never have to pay for another water softener, ever. So now you can get all the benefits of soft water for less when you rent from Culligan. Imagine a spot-free home, softer skin, and brighter laundry for dollars a day. Even better, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy, plus helps all your appliances last longer. Let your Culligan man take care of your water when you rent the world's most efficient water softener. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of healthcare in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit services, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection of Alvernon and Valencia and Camino Seco to Houghton along Speedway Boulevard. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We are talking to Dr. William Hartman, Bill Hartman, and Dr. Donald Davis, Don, about their founding of the Planetary Science Institute in 1972 as PSI, based here in Tucson, celebrates its 40th anniversary. And Bill and Don, when we talked a little bit about how PSI came about, early on in its formation, both of you were interested in the origin of the moon, correct, Bill Hartman?
Yeah, that's right. And that was one of the big puzzles at that time in the late 60s. The Apollo program had been sold partly as an opportunity to get to the moon and bring these samples back that would clarify that. Now, they didn't immediately answer the question, but Don and I were, you know, quite excited about that. And Don was working on dynamical models of the growth of planetary bodies. And I had been coming from the direction of thinking about the biggest impacts that had happened. In Kuiper's lab, actually, in the 60s, I had discovered, and Kuiper and I wrote a paper about this, one of the most clear, well, the most clear big impact scar or basin on the moon, big concentric rings with fractures and so forth. And having discovered that, it got me to thinking about what happens when there are really big impacts between planetary bodies. And really big impacts were coming out of some of Don's
and
calculations.
Don's pioneering work on the history of really the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter.
Yes. One of the exciting aspects of these times were the fact that people were beginning to be able to put together fairly sophisticated computer simulations. The equations can get really complicated, so computers came along, and all of a sudden we had this wonderful tool to explore what was actually happening. So I was working with others to develop models for the formation of planets, and then I extended that to looking at the collisional evolution of the asteroid belts, which are this population of leftover planetesimals from the formation, sort of the rubble pile left over from the planet building process that we can look at. And so with computers then, we can explore the processes that lead to the present asteroid belt that we have today and what it was like early on in the early stages of the solar system.
So in 1974, you presented, Bill and Don, you gave a talk about the origin of the moon and a year later published a paper about it. It's now the leading theory of the origin of the moon. What was the theory prior to give me the bottom line, the prior theory, and what is your theory, Bill Hartman?
There were several theories, and for example, that the moon might have been a body formed in other parts of the solar system and captured in orbit would be one example. And these theories, one of the Nobel Prize winner, Harold Urey, made a joke about it that none of the three leading theories worked, so therefore the moon must not really be there. But it was there. So what Don was doing, as he described, what we pictured was here's the Earth growing at our particular distance from the sun. Astronomers call that one astronomical unit. And as the Earth grew, it wasn't the only thing growing there. There were second largest bodies, third largest bodies, and fourth largest bodies. So what we did in our paper was Don ran his model on what would be the size, a reasonable size for the second largest body. And we discovered that they could easily get up to the size of Mars by the time the Earth finished forming and then crash into the Earth. Because you have to picture the Earth itself is the biggest object in that zone, and it's sweeping up all the smaller stuff. So with a very large impact, let me explain how that fit one thing about the moon. We knew at that time that the moon has no big iron core like the Earth does. So the interior of the Earth, huge iron core, a lot more iron than the moon has. So the moon, how does it form next to the Earth without getting any iron? And the answer we had was that if you smash something into the Earth, it blows the outer rocky material off the Earth, and the moon ends up being made just out of that rocky material. Famous conference in 1984 came along. The theory kind of languished for 10 years, and then at that conference there was a scorecard kept at the end of the conference. Somebody got up and said, well, this Hartman Davis idea was clearly the leading idea.
So it was the only one left standing. At the end of the conference, right. Everything else had been destroyed.
Yeah, so the Hartman Davis theory of the origin of the moon, basically the moon was formed by an impact.
Gigantic impact.
A large, large planetesimal, almost as big as Mars, smashed into the Earth. The material from that giant collision, much of it actually wound up into orbit around the Earth, and it coalesced, collapsed to form a moon, which at that time was orbiting much, much closer to the Earth than it is today. And over time, tides have caused the moon to recede out to the present distance that we have it today.
That tidal part is well understood, and that was known in the 1700s, in fact, by French dynamicists. But that big collision, that's what threw the material out that made the moon. But what's also interesting is it's kind of a random process in the sense that it doesn't necessarily have to happen to every planet. So that's why other planets don't have a single big moon like the Earth does.
But on the other hand, Pluto and Charon, yep, which is a giant satellite of Pluto, does have a large moon relative to the size of the body itself too. So again, yes, we think that a giant impact occurred on the Pluto system to form that big satellite.
So it can happen elsewhere, but not necessarily. It's a nice kind of theory that way.
We've been talking with about the first 40 years of the Planetary Science Institute here, based here in Tucson, with the founders, Dr. William Hartman and Donald Davis. In the remaining minutes, perhaps let's look forward. Where are we going in space exploration? Many of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s were very jazzed at the time about space and going to the moon and the future. When you think back to 1969, Don Davis, looking ahead 40 or 45 years, you would think we would be further along in our space exploration program.
Well, that was certainly the expectations. And I personally feel, and perhaps Bill feels likewise, that we were exceedingly fortunate to be born when we were and come, yeah, along just at this time to be able to catch this wave of space exploration that was just becoming technologically possible too. So yes, we had great visions by the 70s and 80s. We were going to be going to Mars. Astronauts were, mm-hmm, going to be flying there. Colonies were going to be established. I actually worked on programs doing planning for that. But then budget reality set in and all of the factors that cause our dreams to be anchored in reality. But looking ahead, we are at the moment engaged in a magnificent planetary exploration program, robotic program in this country. We have missions to Mercury, to virtually all of the planets, and one all the way out to Pluto. This is just a wonderful, wonderful exploration program. And I would certainly expect and hope that we could keep it going at a viable level, because this is one of the crown jewels of NASA's program. It returns so much science for the dollar. And the budget of this is only a little over 5% of NASA's total budget. And NASA's total budget is only a couple of percent of the federal budget. So it's a tiny, tiny amount, and look at what we are learning from it.
And Bill Hartman, you are the author of A Traveler's Guide to Mars. So I wonder when we're going to be able to use that that guide.
Well, probably two halves to the answer. One is for humans, and that's certainly put off for a while now. But the robotic probes to Mars, these rovers that can land, there's so many interesting landing sites, and that's how I tried to organize that book, was by different places on Mars that are really interesting and tell us something about the history of the planet and where there might be life or fossils and all of that sort of thing. I think that Mars is very interesting in that regard because it's the planet most like Earth, and it's really the one that can tell us something about, as I would say, our human role in the whole universe, because we still don't know whether we're the only living creatures in the universe. And Mars had, particularly in the past, has had an environment so much like the Earth. There was liquid water. There were rivers running there. We see the same kinds of geology on Mars. Sedimentary rocks have been found there. So the question is, if you had all of those features of the Earth, it was much colder, but if you had all those features, could life have ever started? And we haven't quite answered that yet.
the future of Mars exploration for humans, it seems like the date just keeps getting pushed back, doesn't it?
It does, and that's driven by financial realities. It's going to be very, very expensive to go there too. So we will have to, I think, put our economic house in order and hopefully can get international partners to come in with us to share the cost, because this should be an endeavor for humanity, not just for any individual nation, I believe.
It's a really exciting thing about working in planetary science, because I believe that planetary scientists, we naturally form international teams, and that can be a kind of role model for international technological cooperation in other issues like global warming. It doesn't do any good for one country to tackle that. You know, that's something where we all have to work together.
And the remaining few seconds, the PSI presence in Tucson remains bright.
It definitely does, still growing.
Absolutely, absolutely. As long as NASA has a program, we'll be part of it.
Okay, yes, right. Dr. William Hartman, Dr. Donald Davis, the founders of the Planetary Science Institute based here in Tucson, thank you very much for talking about the first 40 years and perhaps where we're going in the next 40 years. Thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting us.
PSI will be hosting its annual Dinner and Silent Auction to celebrate the 40th anniversary on April 26th, Thursday evening. The venue will be the Westward Look Resort. It'll be a chance to meet and talk with many scientists. And I'll be doing some more interviewing with Bill Hartman and Don Davis at the event. Tickets are online, and you can call the PSI office 622-6300 for more on ticket information. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. If you're looking for a CPA, and who isn't this tax season, we strongly recommend Michael C. Flowers. That will do it for the Monday edition of The Buckmaster Show. We'll be back with you tomorrow on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice and The Voice Network, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.